Welcome to SaaS Unlock. I'm bringing you amazing guests from across the globe. This guy is very special. He's Indian, based out of Canada, but now settled in Thailand. Very unique story of an entrepreneur. I met him like twice, but I already feel that and that vibe that any entrepreneur might possess. So he's a great people person. Welcome, Ronnie, to the show. Very warm regards from the other side of the world where it's too cold and you are enjoying Thailand.
Yeah, thanks, man. I really do appreciate it. Thanks, Prateek. Thanks for having me. I really, speaking of the connection, I definitely think that from the first time that we spoke, it's definitely been there. You're from my hometown of Mumbai. Definitely appreciate that, the warm welcome. And, you know, there's a hometown connection there with you for sure.
So I was checking out your brand name, Brandzio Watches, right? Mm-hmm. You are into e-commerce. You are an entrepreneur. You are a marketer. You did a lot of things in your career and you ended up like right now in one of your ventures at Brandzio. We'd love to learn more about how you started it, what inspired you to come up with this product and
sure.
Why watch?
You want to know the honest truth, man? Immigration's a bitch. So, like I'm gonna be super honest with you and with the crowd. The thing is, so we had a decent life in India, right? Definitely. Quite lucky in my upbringing, went to the right boarding schools, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when you immigrate to a new country, mm-hmm. everything changes, right? So imagine, you know, we moved from India, we moved to Canada, super lucky, appreciate everything. And I call it the golden ticket because you get to move to a different country and then you get to hit the reset button of your life. That's the upside. The downside is nobody tells you is that no matter what your qualifications were in India or mm-hmm. what you might have done, they're not recognized in this new country, right? So for example, if you're a doctor, lawyer, engineer, whatever you've done in India, good for you. When you move to Canada, certain things are not, of course, recognized. So when I moved, with a family of four living in somebody's basement, like a one bedroom basement. I used to work three jobs.
That reminds
one of them was picking.
That reminds me of my stories.
Yeah, I know exactly, right? So it's like, yeah, I used to work three jobs. We had to make rent. I mean, not that rent was much, it was still $600 Canadian, but for a family of four, that, you know, we converting rupees to dollars and all that, it was a lot. So I found the one thing that kept me motivated, which was essentially money. So if I were to be like super brutally honest with you, what drove me to start my journey was essentially a fact of wealth accumulation, to say, look, whatever I do, I just want to make sure that I don't end up the way in the same straits as I was when I had moved to Canada. So, you know, our experiences sort of mold us, they do change us. And that's how I learned online marketing. I'm a child of the internet, and we both are. And then, you know, taught myself online marketing, doing a Google Ads course, watching YouTube videos, reading. They didn't even have YouTube videos back then. There was like just reading content online on Google and everything else. And then, you know, squeaking my way into working for HSBC or anything else. But the interesting part is, you know, I sucked my teeth into online marketing, let's say retail, e-tail. At Best Buy, which is quite interesting because every morning when I got to the office at 8 a.m., mm-hmm. there would essentially be five campaigns waiting for me to be trafficked. And I had a budget of $5.5 million, right? So every day I got to make mistakes mm-hmm. on some other person's coin, right? Which mm-hmm. was Best Buy's coin or Sony's coin or something else. I got to learn everything about Facebook ads, Google ads, Instagram ads, everything else mm-hmm. on somebody else's coin, right? But I worked from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., right? Wow. So in a couple of years, I had accumulated something to the tune of about 5,000-6,000 hours of experience.
Yes.
And at that point in time, you say, look, you know, maybe I want to try something else. Maybe I want to try a different venture. Maybe I want to try and go freelance. Tried all that stuff, failed at it miserably, tried to start an ad agency, failed at it miserably, tried to start like a couple of other things, didn't really work out. And then I read somewhere that the margins on watches are about 80%. So that's how I started in the watch business. Today, we own a portfolio of 15 different sites. Some of them watches, some of them are in software, and some of them are in different niches. Some of them are content sites, some of them are e-commerce sites, some of them are, you know, a mix of both. And so here we are, you know, over 60 plus employees, completely remote company for over a decade. This year is my 10th year, so long time.
So all of these watches that you have on your site is customly designed by your team?
Yeah, for sure. Like these are all custom made, custom designed, custom. We started designing them Every I think every year we, not and I think I know that every year we have a new range that comes out. There's a new drop, and everything is just that's how we work. We work on a cycle. We make Quartz watches. Quartz watches. The reason why I chose Quartz was because Quartz has the lowest barrier of entry for watches. So if you don't know much about watches, and if you want to get into the watch world, you're like, hey, look, this piece looks good. It looks flashy enough. I'm gonna buy it. There's a certain price point of a customer that we go after, which is the $100 customer, right? They see it on the gram. They don't have to think twice about it, and they're like, okay, I'm just gonna buy it. It looks good. It goes with my wrist, and I'm happy to do so.
Makes sense.
So that's who we basically cultivated to. That's who we go after. That's how it is.
When did you start this product and e-commerce site?
10 years ago.
Wow.
Yeah, it's been a while, man. Not 10. I'd say like 20. Well, no. 8 years ago. So 2015. January of 2015.
Walk us through your success journey. Like, what were initial days look like?
There is no success. I wish there was a success, man. It's like, it's still like, there's a lot more stuff to be done, but you give me too much credit. I can tell you my mistakes, because I think when I do chat with people, I think it's pretty interesting to talk about mistakes before we talk about successes. First mistake that I ever made was I tried to do everything myself.
Mm-hmm.
I never got to delegate. I didn't hire fast enough. Because 6 months into my business, I was the person who was doing my own accounting. I was the person doing customer service. I was the person doing all the media buyers. I was the person doing sourcing, designing, end-to-end, everything. It was just one person. That was me, right? And by month number three, I had basically burnt out. And so I kept trying to push myself. I said, yeah, I can do it. But it's not really ideal, right? So mistake number one was not hiring fast enough. Because I believe if I had hired faster, I would have definitely been able to scale a lot quicker. The second thing was, which I'm happy to share with you, is I didn't hire right. Right. I definitely took people at their word, which I'm sure everybody does. But the second part, which is completely my mistake, is I didn't set the goals. I didn't have right systems of monitoring them. I didn't have the right goal systems in place to say, look, these are the goals. This is what we need to achieve, and this is where we need to go with it. Right. I just said, hey, here's what we need to do, and I'll just let you go and execute it at the end of the day. There was no follow-up. There was no system of management or performance reviews or anything else. And that definitely was on me, right? 6 months down the line, of course, you see all the customer reviews and you're like, what the hell's going on? Blah, blah, blah. And then all of a sudden you're like, holy shit, I've screwed up pretty bad. And because my employees came to me and they said, you never told us this, right?
This important aspect, right? Because... thank God I learned this early in my journey while I was working in a job. So I was growing my team, right? So like making sure setting the expectation right for your employees and setting the KPIs, and you measure that, like, you know, with them every week to make sure that you're helping them enough to succeed. It's very crucial for any business. Thank you for sharing that.
Now, yeah, for sure. And that's where I went wrong, 100%.
What advice would you give someone if somebody is looking to start, there are a lot of products out there. People want to be in e-commerce industry. What are the key things that you would consider if you want to start over again?
Well, yeah, I mean, look, there's a couple of things to look at, right? Number one is, do you want to niche down? Everybody talks about niching down, right? So what happens when you start niching down is you basically your audience gets smaller and smaller and smaller and smaller, right?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that, okay, that's really good if there's a certain need for it, right? For example, if you're talking about a certain type of a watch, it's really good if people only like a certain sort of a watch, which is pretty good. The other thing that I, or maybe like, you know, like there was this guy, I think, who I met, he was selling on Amazon, and what he was doing was he was selling, you know, this thing you put in the collar of your shirt and it keeps your shirts upright. Super interesting, right? You made $1 million a year doing that. Very niche product, very good. However, for me, I think I would advise against it, because, you know, you'll max out your niche at a certain point in time. Mm-hmm. So that means you can only scale, but there's a ceiling level to that, right? And then you'll start expanding. But what I would say is, you know, go broad, figure out what, you know, who your audience is, and then scale it from there. So there's two different variations of it, right? I mean, even if you look at your Facebook audiences, when you want to advertise today, Facebook says go broad. The earlier Facebook used to say go niche. So, you know, both different perspectives that I'd be willing to offer you.
In terms of product, right, there are now, let's say, a lot of watch brands out there. So it's competition everywhere, right? no matter what niche you go in. How do you deal with that as an entrepreneur?
There's about three things that would differentiate you, right? Number one, the quality of customer service is what defines who you are, right? If you are responding to customers one-on-one every day as a founder, it's always a good idea, right? If you are interviewing your customers once a month, your top 10, just randomly pick up your phone, call 10, 15, 20 customers, see what they're up to, what they love about you, what they don't love about you, find out where you're, what, you know, I usually take it as feedback where it's like, people are like, look, I don't like X, Y, Z. And I'm like, okay, that's interesting. Or some people, your customers will always have an opinion, right? So it usually helps you see things outside of your echo chamber. Mm-hmm. Because your team is your echo chamber. Your team's never going to tell you you're wrong or whatever, because they're just either they're too polite or either they're just too nice to you, right? So your customers will always be that sort of the, let's call them the people who will always challenge you, right? The other thing is always the criticism that your customers give you, right? Mm-hmm. Constructive criticism. Let me say that constructive criticism. That's a very important word because customers like to bitch. Take that with a grain of salt. A constructive criticism on how you can improve is extremely important, right? Everybody has an opinion. What you take out of that opinion is up to you, right? The people will share the experiences, et cetera, et cetera. You just, it's like a buffet. You pick and choose the things that are most relevant to you. Okay. I think the other thing in terms of competitive advantage, that would be extremely important is our operation is 24/7. 24/7, 365. We don't close on Christmas. We don't close on New Year's. We work every day. Like I work on, like for me, if I have to show up for work, I find comfort in showing up for work on weekends. I love it, right? Some people are like, nah, I can't do it. But the thing is, I don't expect my employees to come in on weekends, but somehow they're always there.
Makes sense.
I don't force them. I don't want them to. I hope they have a life. They have a family. They have everything. It's up to them, right? But if they decide to work, that's up to them. They like it. Some people find comfort in work like I do. So,
and that's how like the startup world is. And people are now used to this culture because at the end of the day, as a business owner, you are 24/7 person, but sometimes your customers might need you and you're available on the weekend. That goes a long way. It helps like, you know, build stronger bonding between employer and employee. And yeah, you can rely on those kind of...
But I've never asked them to come in. Please keep this in mind. I don't want them to come in. I would prefer they not work. I don't want burnt out. I don't want mules. I want horses, right? At the end of the day. But if they come in, it's up to them. It's their prerogative. I mean, I get told, you know, people have an opinion of my employees working on certain days, but it's not me who essentially would like that to happen. It's a good thing. Like it makes me happy, but you know,
really great it's their thing choice. That you have. So
yeah, I'm lucky, man. 100%.
So there's one thing, right? The technology is changing day by day, and
sure.
Specifically, like when it comes to like devices, watches have been digital. What do you think the product holds for the future that industry it serves?
Watches are going to go forward and they're going to go take a leap back. I'll speak a little bit about the watch market. The watch market for the last 2 years has been extremely hot. Not quartz watches, let's talk about mechanical watches, right? Mm-hmm. So anything that's new, shiny, the Rolex Daytona, blah, 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 they were overpriced. So a Rolex Daytona, for example, on retail cost about 17, but there were none available. So it's like the used car market, right? So it was they were extremely rare. So they were pricing it at about 40, 50K, right? Mm-hmm. Now, they started to come down. And guess what? One type of watch that is always consistent has always held value, which is your vintage watches. So watches from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. new vintage, whatever, right? They might have not have cost much. They might have cost you 9 to 12K and they'll stay consistent at that level. Now, the thing about digital watches versus analog watches is people who like analog watches will love analog watches no matter what, right? It's a deep, dark hole with it. People who like for example, I'm not wearing one now, but sometimes I will wear a smartwatch. But I find comfort in wearing an analog watch. It's up to personal preferences, right? So one of my friends is a golfer. He loves wearing a Garmin on the golf course because he wants to measure how far the field is, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, how far he has to drive. I believe every watch has a purpose. So if you're going for a black tie event, you probably want to bring out a formal watch. If you are doing something on it, you know, a tool watch, which is your daily wear, you can just use a normal watch. Yeah.
So do you think that your company has also come up with like any digital watches forward?
Nah, man. Nah, not my thing. I mean, you can get them. If you go to Shenzhen and you go to Ha Chong Bay, you can get them by the kilo for about $100. I know how it works. It's like there's no differentiation there.
Makes sense.
I mean, 15 years ago, sure. I mean, you know, you have to develop a watch. You have to compete with the likes of Fitbit. You have to compete with the likes of Garmin, et cetera, et cetera. Of even, so Fossil is a good example of that. Fossil went from being an analog watch company to being a hybrid watch company. So Fossil, some of the Fossil watches that you see on the market, they actually are analog watches that double out as digital watches.
Yeah, my wife has one, I remember.
Yeah, there you go. So very interesting choice there, right? But Fossil is a $200-$300 brand, right? Remember, from the one true piece of jewelry that men get to wear in their lives is a watch.
Watch.
Yeah. So that's why, you know, the sign of success for us, you know, when we sign a first big contract could be a Rolex or a Patek, and then, you know, it just goes, then your watch hole gets, then becomes a disease. Because then you start researching all these mechanical watches and then you're like, oh my God, I'm in a hole now.
So at the end of the day, you know, no matter how great your product is, no matter how big your brand is, you need to generate that demand, right, for your business. Sales are the number one thing that drives. How do you reach to your customers? In the last 10 years, you've definitely tried all of the channels out there. What is something that worked really well for you?
And top funnel, bottom funnel, mid funnel, right? So most of the stuff that top of funnel is usually YouTube or Facebook ads, and then bottom funnel for us. And we stuck to it, right? There's always this new thing about TikTok. We test 20% of our budget is always for testing, right? Failures include TikTok. Such brand names such as TikTok, Pinterest. You know, all the stuff we tried didn't really work for us. Tried influencers, worked really well for us. Scaled it, you know, tripled, quadrupled all investments in there. Google. So you have your bread and butter. Bread and butter usually being top of funnel is Facebook, YouTube. Bottom of funnel would be Google search and shopping. Right? Mid-funnel would be stuff like influence, right? So now you think about this, right? It takes about 14 to 20 times before, and the conversation pieces from when I started to now, they just keep increasing the touch points of how many times you need to be in a customer's top of mind before they actually come and buy. So I need to be able to reach out to them 20 times today versus 10 years ago when I just had to reach out to them 6 times. So, you know, there's a big difference in how that language is going on today.
Wow. So the frequency of reach should be 20 times before they even like make a purchase.
Correct. That's messed up, man.
Wow.
That's why retargeting plays a really important role, like for SaaS founders, for e-com founders, for any sort of a founder. It's like you need... If somebody ever visits your website, that means they've shown some intent. Treat them as top of funnel customer. Hit them as hard as you can. You know, maybe make a nurturing pipeline of how that goes. You know, customer visited your website, never purchased, but you know what sort of pages they went to, and they're like, okay, maybe they want to get targeted with a video ad, and then could be through a video sales letter. Then it probably goes down, you know, to you show them reviews of your ad, showing reviews of your product or your service. And then probably they'll probably ask their friends. They'll go research G2 or Trustpilot and all that. And then they'll ask their friends about it. And then they'll probably be like, okay, now I'm ready to purchase. And this is for a $100 product. Imagine what's happening to people who are selling $4,000-$5,000 products.
Wow. So you're saying the most important channel for your brand is paid advertising.
Correct. Yeah. And SEO now. So like SEO, we drive about 1.5 to 2 million clicks just on organic traffic. So which is pretty good. So it's free clicks. But the thing about SEO is it's very consistent. So you have to stay extremely consistent in the amount of content you're putting out, how often you're putting it out, what you're optimizing towards, and what that sort of process looks like. I mean, we've been trying to scale SEO. We usually buy content sites. We do roll-ups of content sites, and we put them into the main site, and then we scale it. So we started on SEO about 3 years ago. 3 years ago, we used to get about maybe 10,000 clicks organically. Today, we get about 2 million. So big difference.
Oh, this is a great, great growth, man, on the SEO front.
But man, it's three years and 10 people working on it consistently. So it's like when people say, after 1 month, I haven't gotten any uplift. I'm like, trust me, SEO takes a long time, but people give up easily, right? They don't see instant rewards.
Agreed. So now this part of the session is more of like rapid fire. I'll ask you five.
Sure, shoot.
And you have like, you know, you have to instantly answer that.
Okay.
Name one other company and CEO that inspires you and why.
Oh, that's an interesting one. Warren Buffett, consistency, you know, no immediate rewards, long-term
patience,
growth.
Patience, wow.
Patience, man.
What's one of the best business advice you have ever received?
Oh, that's an interesting one. Fucking just try it. Seriously. I'm not even like, it's like the literally what I'm going to phrase is extremely important for me. And it's in my mentor book, which is basically what have I got to lose?
Interesting. What's one skill that has helped you become successful?
Persistence.
Persistence.
I don't give up, man. I'll probably outlive all the cockroaches in the world, probably.
Love it. What motivates you the most? You know, we are entrepreneurs, and when we are like, you know, we see like, you know, ups, downs, challenges, problems with employees or with businesses, profits, losses. There's something that, you know, keeps you going. What is that thing?
Yeah. What is that thing? You know, it's an interesting one. For me, it was money. Still is. 8 years ago, it was that. Today, it still is. Man, unfortunately, that's people like, what is your passion? People get upset when I say this. But honest to God, man, it's money. Like, it's like, I have seen in my bank. I have seen my bank account in overdrafts. I have seen all that. So I know what it is to build your personal wealth. It's extremely important to me.
This is one of my favorites, one, because everyone has their own favorites.
Sure.
What movie or a book or a TV show that changed your life?
Cool. That's an interesting one. I like Suits, man. Suits was pretty good. It was
it's 9 seasons.
It got really boring towards the end. The first season was really good because I thought it was like, oh, this guy just he's an intelligent guy, never got into Harvard. And I was like, oh, so he can be a lawyer. It was interesting, right? The premise of it was interesting. Movie that I still love and I'll watch it twice over again is Snatch. Snatch is definitely one of my favorite movies of all time. Again, similar sort of a plot lines. You don't know what's happening, but it's just the dialogues in the movie were quite phenomenal.
I agree. And the personality that like kind of, you know, brings that dopamine in you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. It's kind of fun, man.
Love it.
The soundtrack, I still have the soundtrack saved. So because the soundtrack of the Snatch movie was got me big into it. So I really love it.
Thank you for sharing that. So yeah. We come to an end of this podcast. We want to thank you for taking the time and sharing your ideas and your learnings with the audience. So before we end, do you want to share with the audience any discount coupon codes that they can go to your site and buy the product?
Yeah, sure. So if you go to website brandsway.com, use the coupon code SASUNLOCK and you'll be able to get 15% off minimum. If there's any issues, you can always reach out to me on LinkedIn. My name is Ronnie Teja, RONNIE, last name Teja. You'll probably have the social handle somewhere after the podcast as well.
Thank you so much, Ronnie, for doing that. We hope you enjoyed this session with Ronnie, and we are going to bring you more successful guests, entrepreneurs around the globe. If you have somebody in your mind, please reach me out on LinkedIn or make the introduction, and I'll be very happy to bring them on the show. Until next time, this is SaaS Unlock signing off. Bye for now.
Thanks, buddy.